Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to Sister Wives with Mary Jane Kay. Today, I'll be giving my commentary on Seeking Sister Wife, Season 5, Episode 6, Seeking Commitment. The episode opens with the Sherwoods. Ashley and Shane are going to meet Sarah today. This is Ashley's second date with Sarah, and it's Shane's first time meeting her. So, of course, Shane has mixed feelings after the clusterfuck with Grace. Now he has more of a wall up and he is nervous about this first meeting. Ashley thinks things are great with Sarah. They have a lot in common, but she worries about whether Sarah and Shane are going to have the same chemistry that she has with her. If Shane and Sarah don't have a good dynamic, that's a deal breaker for Ashley. At this point, Ashley asks Shane if it's okay for her to kiss Sarah in front of him, and Shane reveals he might be jealous. He's okay with them holding hands, though. Shane knows about the first date kiss his wife had with Sarah, and he's happy that there is chemistry there, but he says if kissing happens today in front of him, that's going to be new for him, and he's never seen Ashley be affectionate with anyone else while he's there. You know, if this guy is already insecure and jealous about his wife being affectionate with another woman, and he's not comfortable seeing more than Ashley and Sarah holding hands when he first meets her, I really don't foresee that in the future he's just going to magically adjust to it and not be insecure and not be jealous, that he's just going to be all good with it. If he's jealous at just the thought of this, he will be jealous when it's all up in his face, and he already has tons of insecurity about the potential for his wife to like the new girl more than she likes him. And he fears that the new girl might steal his wife away from him. He said that many times. You know, I think Shane has a lot of baggage surrounding this. And who wouldn't? Because Shane has mentioned that in his past, he had a girlfriend who broke up with him, who left him, and she told him that she was into women. And it made Shane wonder if he was the problem, if he caused her not being into men. Now, obviously, Shane had nothing to do with that, but that insecurity seems to linger with him, that women will leave him to be with women. And he's already voiced that fear. He has this fear with his wife that she is going to be leaving him with this new girl. He's threatened by potential affection of seeing his wife be affectionate with someone else. He's already jealous. So I really don't see how this could work out long term, regardless of how well Ashley and Shane communicate and prioritize each other. I still think it's going to be a shit show of epic proportions. We'll see, but I think Shane wants to maintain his family unit. He has a young baby, he has a baby on the way, and I think he also wants his wife to be happy and feel good and explore herself. And I think that's great if he's open to that and comfortable with it. That's great if it doesn't hurt him, but I think in the end, I wonder, is this guy really going to be okay with this if he already seems so insecure about it now in the beginning, before things have really progressed? Now, Sarah's first impression of Shane is that he looks like an average, easygoing guy. He seems like a dad. Seth learns that Sarah has an 8-year-old son, and he asks Sarah if she has considered having any more kids. And she jokes that Seth has to at least take her out to dinner first because mini golf isn't going to cut it. Seth is feeling that Sarah is everything Ashley said she wanted. She has a good sense of humor. He feels she's beautiful and that she has a good head on her shoulders. Shane really, though, feels awkward with the flirtation between Sarah and his wife. He points out that Ashley and Sarah, they were flirting a lot, and that's the first time he has ever experienced it. So he feels like the third wheel, the odd man out. It feels awkward. It looks awkward too. Ashley's really happy that, unlike Grace, she really feels the sexual attraction with Sarah, and Sarah feels comfortable flirting with her with Shane around, even though it's their first time meeting. And Sarah feels like Shane is cool with all of this and like he really wants Ashley to feel loved and wanted. So she thinks Shane is okay with it. Next, Shane asks Sarah if she's ever been in a dynamic like this. And Sarah has not done the sister wife's thing, but she has dated couples before. But she makes it clear that those situations where she dated couples, it was more of a friends with benefits thing. It wasn't really a serious relationship thing. So Shane is concerned because he feels when you mention polygamy, people assume it's everybody having multiple partners, hooking up with no structure, like swinging and all about the sex, without a structure, without a hierarchy, without anything. And that's really not what Shane feels he and his wife are looking for. So that's a red flag for Shane. He worries that Sarah really isn't looking for polygamy, but she's just looking to kind of date them casually. Shane brings up his concern with Sarah, and Sarah says, you know, you would act like you were in a relationship when you go out with these couples, but it wasn't a full relationship where you text every day and you date consistently with these couples in the past. She says it was more like meeting up maybe every couple of months. Ashley feels like Shane is really interrogating Sarah, grilling her, coming on way too strong, asking too many questions. It's just her second date with Sarah. So Ashley is feeling like Shane is being a very harsh critic, and he's typically a harsh critic with the potential women that she is seeing. Both Ashley and Shane ask Sarah what she is looking for. Shane admits that he did come on too strong because he says he and Ashley live in the moment. You never know what'll happen tomorrow, and they really need to move quickly. There seems to be a sense of urgency with this. And they feel like now is the time where they need to move fast with this, with everything they have going on in their lives. Shane tells Sarah that he's confused because it almost sounds like maybe she isn't looking for the same thing as he and his wife are. And Ashley looks pissed. She looks frustrated with Shane questioning Sarah this hard on the first meeting that he's having with her. Next up are the Merrifields. Garrick mentions that he had a rough situation with Natalia yesterday about the dating apps, and now, as a result of that, Natalia is cautious about accepting his apology, but he feels at this point she's ready to accept it. She wants to put this in the past so that they can move forward, and of course, so that he can still ask her to marry him. Danielle looks completely deflated. She's sitting next to Garrick as he's mentioning this, and she has a look on her face like she just found out someone tragically accidentally ran over her puppy. That feeling when your heart drops and you're just devastated. She really, really looks devastated even though she's going along with this. And the thing is, Garrick doesn't seem to notice at all. Next, Danielle and Natalia have a talk, and Danielle explains that in a plural lifestyle, it's super important that the sisters are committed, and she doesn't think it's going to work if the sister wives are not committed with everything that has happened so far and all the recent hard moments that she's had. So Danielle feels it's very important to stress to Natalia how committed she is to her, to this working out, and she wants Natalia to know that she truly loves her and cares for her. So Danielle is going to be giving Natalia the necklace that Garrick designed and created for all of his wives as sisters. And the necklace symbolizes their commitment to each other, to want to see their marriages succeed with Garrick, and it also symbolizes their commitment to each other before the Lord. Listen, the Lord is nowhere in this. Danielle doesn't want to be doing this, and she's doing what Garrick is pressuring her to do just so he can propose by the end of this trip. So he has time to get it in. This is all about Garrick getting his dick wet, and that's all this is about. I have a hard time feeling bad for Danielle when she knows in her gut that this is wrong. She doesn't feel right about it, and now she is manipulating and trying to influence this younger woman who is actually probably smarter than she is, knowing she herself doesn't want this. She knows it's wrong. She knows it's not right for anyone involved, and Danielle knows Garrick's motivations and that Garrick only has selfish intentions. Woman to woman, Danielle should be ashamed of herself, in my opinion. Hopefully, Natalia ends up knowing better in the end. Now, Danielle tells Natalia that she was worried about everything, but now she knows they're on the same page and she feels more peace this morning. She feels good about everything. She feels they're both in the same place with this, so she asks Natalia if she wants to be a part of their wild, crazy family.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and What do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Natalia says she feels calmer, she feels more confident about the conversations she's had with Danielle, and she says Danielle has clarified what worried her. She says she thinks they're going to live in great harmony overall. Danielle agrees. She tells Natalia she's so thankful that they can move past this. She's thankful that Natalia can forgive Garrick. So Danielle asks her, Natalia, will you be my sister? And Natalia says yes. She says she loves Danielle, she loves the family, so it's a go. At this point, Danielle gives Natalia the necklace that Garrick designed, and it's the same necklace that Danielle gave to Roberta. Garrick designed the necklace, and he says they made this necklace, and they plan to give this to every sister wife. Kind of like the Browns with the Made in China Clotta rings they all wear. Except this time, Garrick has designed his own cult symbol. Danielle feels like she is really connecting with Natalia, but she says Natalia is very different than Roberta. And Danielle admits she still doesn't feel 100% that Natalia is committed to her as a sister. But she says she's trying to put those feelings aside. She's trying to trust what God is doing here. She says God has a plan. God has a purpose. So what she wants to do is she wants to ignore her doubts to just trust that things will work out. This woman is so manipulated and brainwashed that she's willing to drink the Kool-Aid over listening to her own repeated doubt. That screaming voice, her intuition telling her, this isn't right, this isn't right, this isn't right. And she's still going to drink the Kool-Aid just to keep Garrick. Her intuition is there for a reason. Listen to it. This lady's intuition is telling her over and over and over, this isn't right, this isn't right, I'm not ready, this isn't right. It's ripping her apart from the inside. And she is ignoring that intuition to drink the Kool-Aid. That's how brainwashed this woman is. Natalia says that Danielle is a great person. She feels she can be open about anything with her. And that really helped Natalia to decide to be in this kind of a relationship. Next, Danielle directs Natalia to get changed because Garrick has something special planned. And he needs to propose. The clock is ticking. All that man is here for is sex. And this is the last night in Mexico, and he can't get it until that ring is on his finger. This is a complete waste of a trip for Garrick if he doesn't get it in, and that's all he cares about. This is so sick. Next up are the psychos, the Ryan family. Becky explains that they have been courting Stephanie for 9 months, and they drove all the way from Texas to Colorado, a 12-hour trip. Becky can't tell who is more important to Stephanie, but she thinks for Stephanie, that's Justin. These people are so delusional. If we remember from the last episode, Stephanie has told these clowns not to come, and they decided to drive 12 hours to go anyways, regardless, ignoring Stephanie's wishes, ignoring her boundaries. They've already gone to Stephanie's gym to pay for her membership, to try and make Stephanie happy for when they cross her boundaries, to try and shove themselves down her throat by showing up at her home. They even debated looking in garage windows or climbing Stephanie's fence, but they have opted to have Becky just knock at the front door. knock at the front door of this woman who has told them already, do not come. And they've come regardless. And on the way down on this 12-hour drive to where they are clearly not welcome, delusional Justin joked that maybe he needed chapstick to make sure his lips are moist for all the kissing he assumes he will be doing with Stephanie, who again told them in plain English, do not come. But now they are here. They're at Stephanie's house, the Cuckoo Birds, and Becky is knocking on Stephanie's front door. If I were Stephanie, I would be looking into a restraining order from these people. I know that's just a piece of paper, but I feel she needs documentation of how these people behave because clearly they've got some screws loose to show up at her gym, to show up at her house when they are not welcome. The Ryans are desperate as fuck, and this is not a good look. I think pathetic is an understatement here. Now, Stephanie answers the door and she asks, why did you guys drive all the way down here? She sounds annoyed right from question one. She's shocked to see that these nuts are actually on her doorstep. She can't believe it. Becky responds that that was the plan. She tells Stephanie that she told them the days that she was off and she told them she wanted to see Justin. And Stephanie makes it clear that she told Justin not to come. Becky ignores it, and Becky tells Stephanie that she's been saying that she's been wanting to see Justin, and so they need to discuss it now. She wants to have a discussion, and Stephanie makes it clear she wants to be with Greg. She says, I want to be with Greg. Like, leave me the fuck alone. Get the fuck off my doorstep. Get the fuck out of my hair. But Becky wants to know when things happened with Greg. She's trying to make a drama. She's trying to make herself the victim of Stephanie when Stephanie has done nothing wrong and these people are encroaching and intruding on this poor woman's boundaries. Becky takes no accountability for being where she shouldn't be. Instead, she has a million questions. She wants to know when things happened with Greg, how it happened. She is very curious. She says, how did this happen with Greg? Because yesterday, she says, Stephanie hung up the phone with Justin saying, I love you, babe. Stephanie explains to Becky that she can't do this. She wants to be with Greg. And at this point, if Becky doesn't leave and apologize for crossing boundaries and just walk away like a normal human being would, I don't know what to say about her. It's obvious to me that Becky doesn't respect Stephanie, she doesn't respect herself, and she also has zero dignity. This is completely unacceptable, and I think it's pathetic because Becky is now begging, asking Stephanie, you don't love us anymore at all? Ding, ding, ding. This is ridiculous. How dumb is Becky? Has she ever even considered that it's possible that maybe Stephanie never really loved them, but maybe they were so taken with her that they projected their feelings and their emotions onto her? That's what it seems like to me. We've all been in situations when we have really liked a person head over heels and they just dip their toe in the pool. Like maybe when you're in your teens or in your early 20s, when you're like figuring out about relationships. But at some point, you learn never to accept people who aren't as into you as you are into them. If you have to chase people, they aren't for you. If you have to push to force things and things just don't flow naturally, it's not for you. Respect yourself enough to walk away from people who aren't as invested in you as you are in them. These people are gross. They don't act with dignity. They don't respect themselves. And they are chasing this woman. They don't respect her. Poor Stephanie, who isn't that into them. But because they are so into her, they feel entitled to her. And it's like a psycho, creepy, delusional infatuation. And now they've driven 12 hours just to show up at her house where they aren't welcome. And Stephanie has made it clear she has someone, she doesn't want them, and they haven't apologized and walked away. They haven't stopped being pathetic. This is unbelievable to me. seeing two adults in their late 40s, early 50s, acting like teenagers who don't know their heads from their asses. WTF. And now Becky is trying to beg for validation. Oh, you don't love us anymore? Guess what? She may never have loved you guys. And these people are just projecting their delusions, their expectations, their feelings onto Stephanie, and they're crossing her boundaries. And it isn't based in the actual factual reality when they're projecting these things. Stephanie has a lot of patience and she's really trying to let Becky off easy. She tells Becky that she loves her, she wants to still have a friendship with her, but she wants to be with Greg. And we learn Greg is home with Stephanie right now. And Becky wonders, she questions in her paranoia if Greg is listening in on this. Now, at this point, Justin is sitting in the car and he couldn't really hear what Stephanie and Becky were saying, but he knew from watching Becky and Stephanie and their body language that it wasn't going the way that he wanted it to go. Justin felt helpless. He wanted to jump in, but he knew that might make the situation worse, so he didn't. You know, in my opinion, Becky acts like a stage 5 clinger. She asks Stephanie if during the time that she was in a relationship with them for 9 months, Greg has been around. And she's asked if it's right, if it's fair for her to not say that she is switching relationships, as if she didn't let them know about Greg. And Becky whines that it's not fair. And she's acting the way a child would discussing this. Stephanie tells Becky that she's always loved Greg. She's always made it clear and they've always known this. And I believe Stephanie seems very direct at her door. I believe she was direct with them so far. Now, Becky tells Stephanie that it's not true, that she didn't make it clear that she always loved Greg, that she wanted to be with Greg, that they've always known that. She says it's not true. And she says that Stephanie told them that she wasn't sexually attracted to Greg. Becky is way too intrusive. I would want this bitch the fuck away from my front door. Becky wants to know next if Stephanie was with Greg in January when she broke up with them. And Stephanie lets Becky know she's been on again, off again with Greg throughout that time. Becky is very angry and she tells Stephanie she was with him. And she asks Stephanie if she had sex with Greg before she had sex with Justin. This is completely inappropriate. And Stephanie lets her know that it's none of her business. At this point, Becky is shouting that now, I need to get tested because of you. You know what? Dirty Becky needs to go get tested, not because of Stephanie. She needs to go get tested because she allowed Justin, her husband, to date different women and bang them when some of them, like Stephanie, probably made it clear that they weren't really into that. Becky is the one who allowed it, and she knew about Greg, per Stephanie, and I believe that to be true. Now, Becky is trying to make it seem like she needs testing, like Stephanie's a big hoe, like it's Stephanie's fault. No, ma'am. This is Becky's fault. She allowed other women into their bedroom before she has them get tested, before they sleep with her husband. Number one. And number two, she seems to have willfully ignored the reality that Stephanie made it very clear that she was with Greg, that she wanted to be with Greg, that she wasn't going to have a relationship with them. This isn't on Stephanie. The Darwin Award for the week goes to Becky. She can't turn this around on Stephanie. She's the one who was having women from the internet sleep with her husband without protection and with no testing done first. That's on her. That's on her husband. That's not on Stephanie. Stephanie seems to have made it clear to them that she was on off again with Greg. Becky feels this went much worse than her worst case scenario. And Stephanie wasn't happy to see her. And she seems shocked by that. Becky says she told her that she was in a relationship with Greg, the friend. This is the best friend she told them about. And Becky says she knows Stephanie made a final decision on Greg because she kept telling her repeatedly she wanted to be with Greg. Becky says she was blindsided. But I believe from the way Stephanie approached this that they have been knowing for a long time about Greg and that she wanted to be with Greg and that they willfully ignored this. Now, Justin asks his wife what Stephanie said. And Becky refuses to tell him. She tells her husband that Stephanie can tell him herself because she refuses to do Stephanie's dirty work. I don't think Stephanie's the dirty one. Becky is desperate. She seems a little unstable. She clings to the fact that Stephanie said she still wants to be friends with her. And she mentions that to Justin as if that's some type of hope. Becky says she just really loved Stephanie and Justin loved Stephanie too. And they claim she was the perfect fit for them. So it's devastating and this is life-changing information for them. Somehow I doubt they didn't know of this before. Becky says she doesn't want to wonder if she will ever be able to talk to Stephanie again. She wants to know and feel like she will never talk to Stephanie again and as if she is okay with that. But she says it's hard for her to just walk away. Well, apparently it's not that hard for Stephanie though. Maybe she should take that in. At this point, Becky is in tears over them never seeing Stephanie again. And she worries about not getting to be friends with Stephanie in the future. Wow, this is desperate. She's in tears and she says she needs someone. She needs someone. If you're that desperate and you need someone to be your friend, there's a problem with that that only a therapist can help you with. Stephanie can't be Becky's someone. Becky seems to have a lot of issues going on. She seems to have some heavy baggage and some very deep emotions. And I think that's something for a therapist to unpack. I think she needs a counselor or a therapist. She doesn't need a friend. It's very weird how desperate this woman is for friends. And my guess is not many women like her because she's so willing to cross boundaries, just like she did with Stephanie. And it really raises red flags. You know, women have strong intuition. If they see a desperate, needy, hot mess with zero boundaries, their internal alarm goes off and their thinking is, I want nothing to do with this. I think Becky needs professional emotional support, not to maintain a friendship with a woman who is just not that into her. It's really wild to me that Becky is so emotionally distraught over things going worse than expected. Stephanie told them, don't come, and they drove 12 hours anyways. She's lucky it didn't end in an RO or a call to law enforcement. She's lucky Stephanie was even willing to have that conversation with her at her front door. This is wild. And Becky and Justin seem to be taking no accountability for crossing those boundaries. And that's scary. Justin still isn't sure what Stephanie's deal is. Even after all of that, he still feels that he needs to figure it out. He still hasn't gotten the message. These people obviously have no self-awareness. They have no common sense if they still don't get it. Stephanie made her deal very clear. She doesn't want to be with them. She wants Greg. She's happy. She's not that into them. She's not as into them as they are into her. It's clear. The deal is crystal. So where is the confusion coming from exactly for these people? At some point, you have to respect yourself enough to get the message and move on. Justin really wants to know what Stephanie told Becky, and Becky doesn't really want to tell Justin. She feels like Stephanie should be the one to tell him. Justin really wants to know. He wants Becky to tell him what Stephanie said. And Becky tells her husband that Stephanie said she wanted to be with her best friend. He was there at the house. They were in a relationship. Justin says that Stephanie has been with another guy and he pushed that to the back of his mind for the last 6 months, that possibly Stephanie could be dating someone else. She would ghost them for days. She would ghost them for weeks and he would push that to the back of his mind. Justin says the 20-year-old him would go to her house and whoop this guy's ass. Yeah, that shows he has no boundaries and he doesn't understand how to respect Stephanie's wishes. And he says that the old man in him feels helpless. He feels terrible. These people are very immature mentally. Justin tells Becky that Stephanie told him she wasn't willing to lose her best friend as a friend. And he set the ultimatum that if Stephanie was going to be in a polygamous relationship, then he would no longer be her friend. Justin says he loves Stephanie, but he realizes now that it's not reciprocated by her. Justin says when somebody promises you everything, when they promise it's till death, he means it. And he says he was so blindly in love with Stephanie that he wanted to be with her in the same way that he is with his wife, Becky. So Justin's really sad. He feels very defeated, but he admits at this point he's done with Stephanie. At this point, Justin wants to go home. He wants to get on his knees. He wants to pray and ask God to allow the depression, the storm of depression, to leave he and his wife, because he feels Stephanie wasn't telling the truth. Next up are the Salahuddins, Nyla and Naeem. Naeem's mom is visiting, and they're going to break the news that Keisha, a potential sister wife, stood them up. And Naeem's mom really didn't like the idea of them pursuing polygamy, so they want to let her know everything. And Nyla really wants Naeem's mom meeting any of their potential sister wives. At functions, she wants the sister wife to be included rather than having to sit out because Naeem's mom may not like her or because Naeem's mom might be uncomfortable. So they break the news to Naeem's mom that Keisha stood them up, and what they were going to do is have her meet Keisha if Keisha had come. So Naeem's mom is thrilled. She is happy that Keisha stood them up. She wasn't ready to meet anyone. She hasn't approved. She doesn't approve of meeting anyone, and she makes it clear she doesn't agree with this. Nyla and Naeem make it clear that they're looking for a new potential sister wife. And Naeem's mom says when they're ready to introduce her, to let her know because she won't be showing up. Naeem explains that his mom has very firm beliefs, but she is also very loving. Naeem's mom says this is crazy. She feels polygamy in the way her son and daughter-in-law are going to be living it isn't even in Islam, because the Salahuddins claim that they're following polygamy and that it's okay because it's in their religion. And she says if they were to take a second wife, that they're supposed to have a second separate household. And Naeem and Nyla deny that. But Naeem's mom insists that in the Quran, they're supposed to have a second household. And Naeem and Nyla adamantly disagree with her. Nyla feels the Quran makes it clear as long as you can treat your wives fairly and the same across the board, then you can marry 2, 3, or 4 wives, that they don't need a separate household. But Naeem's mom stands firm, and Naeem asks his mom if they were genuinely serious with someone, a genuine potential future sister wife, if they brought her home, if she was visiting, if it was someone they really connected with, someone they allowed in their home, if she would really ever consider coming to visit, meeting them, allowing them to visit her home. And as of now, that's the case. She would never come visit and she would never allow them to visit her home. Naeem wants to know how long it might take his mom to adjust, and she doesn't know how long it would take her to feel differently about it. I don't think she'll ever feel differently about it. She's not playing. Next up are the Merrifields. Garrick is all dressed up. He's ready to propose. He's stumbling over the words, practicing to propose in Portuguese. He's really excited, of course, because once he hears a yes, he gets to have sex. And that's all this is about for Garrick, period, end of, for this man, if we can even call him that. Danielle is helping Natalia do her hair and get ready for the proposal. It's really creepy seeing one wife help another wife get ready so her husband can propose to her and hook up with her. And they're wearing the creeping, matchy, culty necklaces. The whole thing feels super creepy and weird and culty. Garrick's nervous. He says he's about to ask one of the biggest questions of Talia's life. He says he loves Natalia so much, and he really hopes, of course, that he likes her custom ring. He designed it to look like a rose, since that's his nickname for her. In my opinion, it's tacky, it's ugly, and it looks like something a much older woman would wear, something they would have locked up in a safe. It's very costumey. It looks bleh. I didn't like it. I don't know. Garrick describes the symbolism of the ring. He says he was on a mountaintop and he was praying a year ago on this mountaintop. And God spoke to him about a sweet rose being added to his family, a sweet rose who would calm the family's heart, who would heal their heart and bring peace to them all. I feel like Garrick overestimates himself and he's delusional, and in his mind he thinks he's a prophet. So culty and so creepy, and his voice is creepy too. Like a lot of cult leaders speak with that soft, creepy tone. Garrick has purchased 11 roses to honor Natalia's Portuguese traditions, and he believes Natalia is supposed to be a wife. And he feels he and Danielle have both felt God's presence and love that she should be a wife. So Garrick says he is moving forward in faith. I guarantee at this moment, Garrick has a lot of faith, a lot of faith. He is on his knees. He knows his dick is getting wet tonight, the last night of the trip. This is what he's been waiting for. Garrick next talks a little about when he first met Danielle. I think he's trying to talk about when he first proposed to her with her sitting next to him to try and manipulate her more to be okay with this. To touch her heart, to touch her fifis, so that she really melts and remembers, oh, Garrick loves me too, so that she goes along and she's okay with this bullshit. So he says when he first met Danielle, they would run together. They would talk about God. They started off as great friends. And Garrick says God spoke to him vocally. He heard God's voice. And God told Garrick, I told Danielle to tell you something, and I want you to go ask her what it is. So Garrick heard from God and he felt heavy, and he asked Danielle what God told her. And God told her that she and Garrick were supposed to get married. God told her Garrick was supposed to be her husband. Garrick says God met them. It was a crazy, supernatural teleportation bubble. He wrapped them up, and Garrick looked at Danielle in that moment, and he knew she was to be his wife. What are these people smoking? What are they smoking? Wow, I mean, I want to experience the crazy, supernatural teleportation bubble. Wow. This is such bullshit. If God spoke to Danielle and God spoke to Garrick and he told each of them they should be married to each other, and she's really such a blessing from God for Garrick, if she is such a blessing, then why doesn't Garrick treat Danielle like a blessing? Why doesn't he respect her enough to listen to her concerns and take them into consideration rather than putting himself first and insisting on this proposal that Danielle has doubts about, that Danielle clearly isn't ready for? The only reason Garrick is insisting on proposing so fast is he wants sex on this trip, on the last night of this trip. That's what this is about. If Garrick really saw Danielle as a blessing, her emotions, her doubts, her voice would be heard by him and validated and taken into serious consideration, rather than Garrick having his primary concern really being his dick. Danielle says that throughout her walk with God, she has had a lot of moments like this where she has had struggles. And she admits she definitely has had a very hard time moving on with Natalia, but she thinks these trials they go through strengthen her belief in God, they strengthen her, and they strengthen her marriage with Garrick. Keep drinking the Kool-Aid. Danielle can live in La La Land if she wants to. This doesn't strengthen shit. Her marriage with Garrick is ripping her apart inside. And Garrick would gladly leave Danielle if she cock-blocked him or if she prevented any of this in any way, shape, or form. The only reason she still has this sham of a marriage with Garrick, the only reason Garrick allows her to cling on, is the fact that she is accepting this bullshit. He knows she has a legal divorce already, and I don't think Garrick would mind much if she walked away. She doesn't have a strengthened marriage, in my opinion. It's not even really a marriage under the eyes of the law anymore. It's not a marriage. But sometimes it's much easier to live in a dream world, to live in delusion, to drink the Kool-Aid than to face the truth and reality. Next, Garrick proposes with Danielle and Natalia's mom looking on. He reads off of his phone. He's very awkward. He pets Natalia's arm and he kisses her hand. The whole thing is cringe AF. Will Natalia say yes? Next, they cut back to the Sherwoods and Shane questions whether Sarah is looking for the same thing that they are looking for. And Sarah explains that he asked her what her past experiences were, and she told him that she dated couples, but that it was casual, it wasn't anything serious. And she tells Shane that's different from him asking what she would do differently in the future. Ashley wants to know what Sarah is looking for, and Sarah says she is open. She's very willing to try different things. She says she's 28, everything she has done in the past really hasn't worked out for her. So she really wants to try something different. And Sarah feels that Shane really wants to protect Ashley, and she knows that's very fair. But at the same time, she thinks it's really too soon to tell whether or not the relationship will be a reality. Shane tells Sarah that he and Ashley, they move quickly with people who they feel good about. He knows Ashley really likes her and he's meeting her now. But he also knows that they've had really bad luck with all of this over the last couple of years. And it's tougher when you get deep into something and you realize the other person isn't willing to have this type of a relationship, or that person isn't who you thought they were. Next, Shane asks Sarah if she is able to leave her past life behind of dating other couples casually to be with them. And Ashley wants to know what Sarah thinks she would look for to know if this is the right person, if this is the right family, to be able to shut those casual encounter doors. Sarah has been through so much in the past, so she admits she has high walls up, that it might take time to tear the walls down and to let that relationship grow into something more. And Sarah feels she just met these people, so she really can't say for sure. Shane's main concern with grilling Sarah is he wants to really make sure that they are all on the same page. Ashley says she isn't going to propose tomorrow, but what she wants is to think ahead and to make sure they all want the same things. Ashley feels like Shane has given Sarah the drill. There have been some really hard questions, and she knows it's really hard to find someone open to their dynamic. But she knows Sarah has been involved in plural dynamics of one sort or another with dating the couple. So she has experienced it on some level. She knows on some level what it entails. So Ashley is really hopeful that Sarah will be ready for that. Shane has much more hesitation. Shane wants somebody to be in their lives now, to be in their lives consistently, and not just every other month. At this point, Sarah is down to hang out. She's down for everyone to get to know each other, and she likes spending time with Shane and Ashley. But she feels Shane is still getting over the last girl, and that's not a great mindset. So Sarah really wants to spend more time with Shane. She wants to have fun with him without worrying about all of that stuff. Ashley feels really good about Sarah. She says Sarah was very respectful of Shane, and now she knows what they're looking for. So Ashley feels she and Sarah have a lot in common. They have lots of chemistry and they have lots to discuss. But Ashley feels really good about things. Shane, on the other hand, feels that Sarah was open to committing, but she really wasn't willing to actively try committing. She has only been in casual situations with a few couples, and Shane feels Ashley was really excited about Sarah, but he has a few concerns that Sarah really isn't ready for this type of relationship or this type of commitment. He feels Sarah is just looking to learn about the lifestyle, but she really isn't ready to jump in. And it really upsets Shane because he feels like Sarah might be leading Ashley on and that ultimately Ashley might get hurt by this. Shane is very worried about his health, and he says he has a lot working against him health-wise. So he really wants to make sure that they find the right person for Ashley, and they feel like now is the time to do this and that they need to move very fast with this. They probably need to be moving slower. Moving fast with this when you have health issues, when your wife is pregnant and has a small baby to take care of, it's overwhelming. It's too much. And Shane already has a lot of insecurity surrounding this. Moving fast is a mistake. I don't understand what the pressure, what the rush is, why it has to happen immediately, why it has to go so fast. I think it's too much. Next, we're back to the Merrifields. Did Natalia say yes? Yes. And Natalia says her heart was beating when Garrick proposed, and she wonders if she was really going to be doing this because she didn't really expect this. She didn't expect to say yes, but she says she's happy. She loves Garrick. She loves Danielle. She loves the boys, and she feels they have a great road ahead of them. The only good news for her if she goes through with this is she will be Garrick's legal wife. She will have citizenship in the U.S. She will have more opportunities, and she will also be protected under the eyes of the law should she discover what a dick face Garrick is. Should Garrick decide to cast her off for wives number 3, 4, and 5, she'll be protected. I think Natalia isn't going to actually go through with this. I think she'll milk this for all it's worth. Garrick will fuck up, and she will be smart enough to decide it's not for her. Natalia's mom says she would never choose this lifestyle for herself, but she respects her daughter's decision. She knows her daughter knows what she is doing with this. She knows her daughter has feelings for Garrick, and that's why this is not a problem for her. All Natalia's mom cares about is that Natalia is happy. Natalia says she loves Garrick. She's so happy it worked out. They all found harmony during this trip. She knows not everything will work out perfectly. There's a long road ahead with ups and downs. She also knows she has a very long journey of adaptation and change. She's going to have to move to another country. She's going to have to deal with another language. And she knows that there are going to be lots of difficulties ahead. But she hopes Garrick and Danielle are very understanding of her and that they help her adjust well to everything. Danielle says this feels surreal, that she and Garrick are already here again, engaged to a new wife. Of course, Garrick wants to have sex. He doesn't want to waste a minute. And Danielle says she wants to keep connecting and getting to know each other. She wants to keep furthering bonds. Garrick's main concern is sex. Danielle asks Garrick what his plans are for tonight, and we all know what they are. Garrick says this trip, it's been a roller coaster, and now he and Danielle and the boys have to fly back to Colorado tomorrow. But they have already discussed how important it is that he has to spend time with Natalia, and he wants to plan a trip down to Brazil just to spend time with her to get it in ASAP. Garrick says a woman becomes a wife when you're intimate, and they believe that God has for a person becoming one flesh, that intimacy means you're a wife now. So now that Natalia has said yes, she has committed to him. She's committed to the family for life, for sure. So for sure, there will be sex happening tonight. And it's where a husband and a wife become one. And Garrick says it's not about the paperwork. It's not about the celebrations. It's about nothing of the sort, according to Garrick. It is the intimacy plus the commitment in his heart and the commitment in her heart and the commitment they have towards each other for life. That's what they believe marriage is. And once they have sex, that's it. It's sealed by God. She's a wife. Danielle says you have to detach yourself. It's like a whole new relationship. It's like your best friend is out there proposing to someone and it feels weird and it feels different. For Danielle to cope with this, she has to detach herself and disassociate from it. That doesn't sound healthy. Danielle says it's exciting. It's a weird feeling, and she doesn't know how to describe it. Danielle leaves Natalia and Garrick to fuck since it's their last night in Mexico. It is so cringe. Danielle is acting like she's cool with this. She's joking about them sleeping. And this is when you can tell it is ripping this woman apart inside to walk out of that room The only way that Danielle can cope with this is to detach from it. This is so unhealthy. This is so toxic. This is all kinds of fucked up. Danielle tells Garrick and Natalia to have fun sleeping as she closes the door to their room. It is so cringe. She says it's been a doozy of a trip. There have been good moments. There have been hard moments. But they are going home engaged and they are all looking forward to the future together. This is torture. This is probably the emotional equivalent of waterboarding for Danielle to have to endure this. And she's making it sound like they're going to skip off into the sunset and there are going to be rainbows and daisies and lotuses and butterflies. And it's going to be so beautiful as they traipse into the sunset. What the fuck? Be real. Be real. That does it for this episode. I'll be back next week for the next episode of Seeking Sister Wife, Season 5, Episode 7, Seeking Answers. Thanks for listening. I'll see you soon. Bye.